WSJ Job Search Advice Radio, episode 2236.
I'm Jeff Alton, the big game,
and welcome.
Today, I have an interesting interview with someone who's had an untraditional career. And that's what I hope you can identify with in this interview. David is someone who is a business owner now, came out of an unusual background. And for those of you who sometimes feel ostracized because this is you, well, David's going to have an interesting interview for you. Hope you enjoy it. Hope you give the show an honest review wherever you listen to it. And we'll be back in just one moment. Support for today's show comes from CareerFitter. CareerFitter will help you evaluate other career possibilities for yourself. Order the premium version using the link below. Take 10 minutes, answer 60 questions, I believe it is, and they'll give you some ideas that will get you thinking. And that's really what you want to be doing. Having outside input help you think about ideas. So again, use the link in the show notes, order the premium version. So my guest today is David Fano. Da-da-da-da. David, well, I'll just simply say, he's not your conventional, I grew up, I follow a straight path. He's had a non-linear career and gone from being an entrepreneur to a full-time employee. In 2015, he sold his company to WeWork, whatever you may want to think about that, where he grew a team from 150 to 3,500 people. During that time, he found his passion for helping people navigate their career and now is building a technology platform called TEAL, T-E-A-L, to help people do exactly that. David, welcome. Great to have you on.
Thanks so much for having me, Jeff. I really appreciate it.
So here you are. You grew up as an art kid, which makes perfect sense as a technologist, collected comic books. Again, part of the profile. You were entrepreneurial, you know, when you were young, selling stuff to your parents' rich friends. Oh, I love that part of the story. So, obviously, there's an indication of nonlinear careers there. How did you wind up being where you are today? Like, what was your thought process as you were developing yourself from being that kid to where you are today?
You know, it's... I've always allowed myself, for better or worse, to follow my curiosity. When I was a kid and, you know, someone from the cable company would come to hook up the cable, I would stand next to that person and annoy them and ask them questions nonstop. You know, I don't know if it was bothering them or not, but it's just the way I've always been. And my curiosity has just kind of driven me. So when I was a kid, it was comic books and I wanted to learn how to make them. I bothered my uncle, who was a graphic designer. He finally gave me a computer. I learned how to scan the pages and color them. I learned Photoshop, which led me to technology. And it's never been about a sort of set destination, but about kind of what I wanted to learn at the time. And that's, you know, just continued to build on itself, which, you know, then led to me wanting a career in art. My dad telling me, hey, that's not a real job. I kind of said, okay, well, that feels like that could be the case. So I went and studied architecture, which was kind of in between since he had been in the building industry, which then led me to, you know, finding more about technology and 3D modeling, which then drove me to going to Columbia, which was a great, you know, technologically oriented architecture school, which then led me to learning about how things in the computer become real with CNC manufacturing and digital fabrication, which then led me to an architecture firm. And then that led me to realize that it moved too slow for me. And I wanted to go quicker, and that led me to seeing that technology is something that can be released quickly and iterate. And you know, then I started a company with some friends helping architecture firms do that, which then got acquired by WeWork. So I got to learn about what it was like to be in a high growth organization, which then, you know, exposed me to the complexities of managing a career. And I'd say it's like more the corporate world. And which, you know, kind of put everything together and said, I love when people get unlocked by technology. I have had a lot of privilege and access in my life, and I want technology to empower that for more people, and I want to help level the playing field. So I'm going to dedicate the next 10 years of my life to trying to crack that problem.
And I want to offer up a quirky question. Who gave you permission to do all of that stuff?
Such a good question.
Yeah. You gave yourself permission. It wasn't hierarchy who did that. You kind of figured out gaps along the way, figured out that this was probably better if I did this instead of this, right? And then from there, that led to the next thing. And again, you're back to being curious. Am I right about that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because honestly, when I would go seeking permission, I would get, you know, kind of what I say is usually my big critique with career advice is people tell you what they would do. It's like, well, it's not helpful for me to know what you would do. So what would you do if you were me? Or, you know, and so I'd ask my dad, and my dad would say, well, you have a stable job. Why are you going to go start a company? That's really risky. That's, you know, you've got a good job. You're moving quickly. You've progressed. You've actually like doubled your salary in 2 years. Why would you leave? And it's like, yeah, because I'm not happy and I don't enjoy this. And so oftentimes when I did seek permission, I didn't get it. So it's a good point that you bring up.
And it's funny, I'm a dad. I know you are as well. I've been very careful not to read the dad playbook. So my son is 20 now and he's in New York. We aren't. And it's been the idea of supporting him as he explores stuff and figures it out on his own, comes back to me for questions rather than my telling him, oh no, that's crazy. You should never, you got benefits, you've got stability. And thus this idea of the nonlinear career, folks, you know, whether you think it or not, you may think you've got a stable job, but the world is nonlinear at this point. You know, look 10 years ago at where you were and where you are now, and it just doesn't work that way anymore, does it? Tech is moving so fast. Our careers are moving so fast. The idea of being linear and following that progression is going to leave you in the dust. So, you know, just be aware you got to open yourself up to new possibilities. Am I wrong here?
I completely agree. And I think just new occupations, new professions, new skills, right? 5 years ago, who would have thought that Amazon would be hiring ahead of cryptocurrencies, right? It's been around for more than 5 years, but the fact that these are at Fortune 10 companies, right? So just new industries, new technologies are forming faster than we know. So to say that I'm going to go to school and I'm going to learn this one thing and that's going to be the thing that propels me through the rest of my career, it's not real anymore. Technology is advancing too quickly. And so as people thinking about our careers, what we really need to do is embrace that growth mindset and that these are opportunities for us to learn and grow, which also coincides with why people leave jobs. People leave jobs because they don't feel like they're growing. It's not really about like comp. They want to grow. They want to feel like they're being intellectually stimulated. And I think we're at a moment now more than ever where the workforce is predominantly, you know, young millennials and Gen Z at this point, and they're not willing to just like take a job, you know, like my parents were. The idea of liking your job was just, you know, that's not something you got to do. You just sort of worked. Now, I think people are unwilling to accept that they will not like their job. Life's too short. They recognize it. And so I think we're going to see much more iterative versions of careers as people work through what matters to them in the moment, and then how the context changes as the world changes.
And for yourself, and I'm going to use you as a model to help other people see how it might be done. You know, it doesn't sound like you were consciously trying to craft a career. You may have at the beginning. But it doesn't sound like with all those things you went through at the beginning, doesn't sound like that's what you went into. True?
No, I've been a little more opportunistic, I would say. You know, I have maybe an idea of what I'd like to do next, but I was never kind of like envisioning what was written on my tombstone, you know, like, well, you know, what's going to be the story told of me, you know, what, you know, when I retire, that just felt like I was setting myself up for failure because the chances of that happening were so low. And then I'd like put up blinders and close myself off to the opportunities that presented themselves. Now, that said, I don't want to just be taken where the wind takes me. So I've always tried to manage an idea of like what matters to me? What do I want to be doing? what are the opportunities that the world's kind of presenting to me? And then how do I navigate the intersection of those two things? So I'm iterating closer and closer, just, you know, loving my job every day. You know, obviously some days are not going to be great, but like, I want to be excited to jump out of work. And basically, you know, people have asked me before, like, how did you decide when to leave? And my answer to all, everyone was always like, when the pain outweighed the pleasure. As soon as the pain outweighed the pleasure, I just knew it wasn't time for me to be there anymore. And there was really literally no amount of money in the world that could keep me at that job.
And if you happen to be an older worker trained like I was, I'll just simply say, folks, you may have numbed yourself out to the pain by now, and you got to get back to feeling stuff. Now, what's interesting is Gen Z, the Zoomers, are much more like the Boomers in that they're workhorses. They work hard. They're focused on it because their first memory, you know, I was in New York for 9/11, so I have that perspective, and many people in the United States have that perspective. Their perspective on 9/11 is from YouTube. Their first real impact moment is the Great Recession of 2008 to 2010, and thus they're economically motivated. Many of them are economically motivated, far more so than the older millennials are. So I just want to remind you, or maybe you could remind folks, you know, about how do you get that feeling back when you're being numbed out to feeling stuff? How did you do it?
Yeah, you know, I'd say that the other thing that was part of my thought process is less from a career perspective. And this was, you know, I saw my dad enjoy life. My dad's an immigrant. He came from Cuba in 1960 with nothing. But I always saw him be unrelenting on life experiences. If he wanted to travel, we figured out a way to travel. And eventually his desire for experiences drove him to be successful, where if he wanted to have a sports car, he could do it. And so this kind of combination of the career as this thing that I enjoy facilitates or enables these experiences that I want to have in life. If I can get those two things working in a bit of a flywheel, then they start to motivate each other, right? So if I want to be able to just say, hey, on a whim, I want to go with my family on a vacation this weekend, well, obviously I need to have the money to do that. That's the blocker to do that. But it's less about the money and more my ability to sort of act with agency. And so that then drove me to figure out, how can I make more money? Well, how can I make more money? But I also still really want to like my job. And I think there's been a kind of a symbiotic relationship between personal pursuits and endeavors and how my career can enable those things.
Gorgeous, gorgeous. Thank you. Now, tell me about your company, Teal. What's it all about?
So, you know, the origins of it were when I was at WeWork and I was thinking about leaving. You know, I had been there for 4 years. I had been consulting to them for about three before that. And for anyone not familiar with the WeWork story, it was, you know, fairly high growth and a lot of excitement and things going on. You know, we grew the company from when I first got there, and we were acquired of a total of like 600 people to between like 14 and 16,000 when I left 4 years later. And then after I left, you know, if anyone's familiar with the things in the news, tricky things happened and it got complicated. But it was a very fast paced thing. And I was, you know, one of the top five executives in the company at the time. So I was involved in a lot, and I got to see really kind of all strata of the business, from, you know, folks that were opening buildings, you know, at the beginning of the month, all the way to what was happening in the executive meetings. And I had never worked at a company so big before. I had consulted to companies that big, but I didn't really understand the inner workings. And I just over time got to see the amount of infrastructure that a company has. And I got to see, like, when people left, you know, the kind of conversations we had, how, you know, how do we deal with this, deal with that. And so when it was my turn to leave, we were having our second child, and I said, you know what, I really need a break. I've been going sort of nonstop for a long time here, and I really want to spend time. We had just sold Case to WeWork when our first daughter was born, and I didn't want to do that again. And the company was getting at a point in time where it was big and probably not like the best suited for me in terms of what matters to me. And there's going to be people more qualified who had that experience to take over the things I was doing. I think I had served my time at the right time. But I started to think about all these concerns. It's like, oh, well, I've got, you know, I got an employment agreement. I've got this, I got that, I got that. And the company was always really wonderful to me. They didn't do anything that led me to believe that they were going to do anything to me, but just the natural fear in that moment that just comes, right? Because if we're worried about, you know, if we resign, will they just say, hey, well, okay, that's cool. You can just leave today. And it's like, oh, wait, but I was counting on that money. Or, well, you're going to have to exercise your options in 90 days. How are you going to come up with that money? Or you're going to have a tax hit. And again, the company did nothing to make me think that they were going to do anything. It was just all in my head. And I saw more and more people going through that. And I know that there's things like employment lawyers, but they're incredibly expensive. You know, there's career coaches that can help you find that. But in those moments, to go through that process of finding someone that's a good match for you is really hard. And so it just got me, it really opened my eyes to the lack of what I would call career infrastructure for the consumer, right? Companies have an HR department. They've got recruiting departments, finance departments, legal departments, consultants, and the consumer really has nothing. And so I got kind of obsessed with this idea. Is like, what if everybody had this global collective HR department that was driven by data and analytics that helped them make career decisions with confidence? Because these experiences that each of us are having may feel incredibly unique, but the truth is they're not, right? There's people resigning every 5 seconds, and there's a best way to do that. You know, there is people signing an exit agreement every 5 seconds, and there's a best way to do that. And, you know, maybe once you become a real senior executive, it becomes more bespoke and more complicated. But for the majority of the people who are less represented and don't have the infrastructure, I was like, technology can help this. And I've just always been such a big believer on how technology can unlock so many things. I said, there's got to be a reason to do this. And I know people need it and I know they want it. Then the big question is there a business here? Because to date, there hasn't been, right? We've got apps to help us with our fitness. We've got apps to help us with our finances. We've got apps to help us with our mental wellness, but we don't have a consumer app for our career. And that excited me. The idea of like tackling a really big problem, getting to build technology from scratch on a problem that I'm, you know, kind of obsessed with. And then I was lucky enough to find some partners and venture capitalists to help fund the idea. And I've been working diligently on it for the last 2 years.
Fabulous. So part of being a consumer is I'm not always happy in my job and it's time to look for something else. How do you recommend people go about their search? Like, you know, that's such a huge question, but I'm sure it's part of what Teal has tackled. So what should people do when they're starting their search, when they're engaged in the search, other than hire a coach, of course, but you know, getting off the humor line, what does Teal do? What do you do? What do you recommend that people do when they're starting their search?
So what I've identified is there's two kind of meta buckets in job seekers. There's the people that know what they want to do and the people that don't know what they want to do. And there, that is a very, very different job search, right? We may call them pivoters. And there's obviously a wide gradient of like the degree at which someone is pivoting, right? Are they switching industry and occupation and location and all sorts of stuff, right? That's like a mega pivot to someone who just might be shifting industries, but, you know, still wanting to be a salesperson from pharmaceutical to software as a service. That's still a bit of a light pivot versus the person who wants to do what they did before and they want to grow, you know, keep their career progression. You know, getting promoted in the context of a job search is non-trivial. You know, the easiest is just do what you did before. And that's like the employer's favorite. But first, it's kind of like understand, not best for the employee, but best for the, that's what the employer wants. And so I'd say putting someone in one of those two buckets is really, really important, because what I've seen is that people that try to job search that aren't clear on what they want to do, they tend to kind of languish in the job search for a while because they put out a very sort of general version of themselves. And so when someone is looking to hire them, like, well, what are you good at? And so I think that's one of the first things I tell people is like, be very comfortable presenting the best 10% of yourself, not the average 100%, because that's actually a deterrent. And it's a bit counterintuitive. People think, oh, I'm going to show you everything I'm capable of. And what that ends up doing is like turning off the job, you know, the employer. So show that you're really good at, you know, a few things, which are the things they tell you they want in a JD. And then once you get
job in, description,
thank you. industry lingo, and I've become a, you know, I'm a little indoctrinated into the career space now. But yeah, exactly. And then once you're at the company, you can grow. Then you can go do all the things that you're capable of and you're excited about. But I think people kind of conflate, you know, pitching where they want to go, all the cool things they want to do, all the things they've done, with the idea that this company has, they have an acute problem. That is the reason they opened this job. They want to know that you are the solution to that problem. And then once you're in, you can do all sorts of stuff. And so they kind of mix the interview and job landing process with the career growth. And so the advice I give everybody, if you're going to do one thing, get crystal clear on like what your value prop is to the market, how you're going to land that job. And then once you're in, you can focus on career expansion.
And with value proposition, I think in terms of what you're most capable of, what your expertise is being the major part of the value proposition beyond the personal. Is that what you see as well?
Absolutely. Right. I say like abilities or skills are the currency of careers. As we get more senior, the skills get a little softer. But I'd say for the first 10 to 15 years of our career, the skills are very much about those abilities that you have. Because if the company had those abilities, they wouldn't have opened the job rec, right? They would have either trained somebody from within. Mm-hmm. They are saying, we've got a gap. We've got a deficiency in terms of abilities to accomplish this thing. We are going to go hire a person that has them. And I think people don't, they really make it this emotional process where it's really quite pragmatic. Right. So, well, they'll train me when I get there. It's like, why would they do that? They would just train somebody that they already know is great. Right. Sure. Some companies may do it. So I'm speaking very parabolically about it. But if you think pragmatically, this is a commercial arrangement. A company is out there seeking to procure abilities in the form of a salary to do something they can't do today. And people really need to think about it in this very dry way. Then things like the resume and the application become far less emotional and less an extension of my identity in written form, and more of a response to an RFP, which is the request for the proposal is the job description, and my proposal is my resume. And maybe it becomes a little less emotional and less belabored.
And unlike a real RFP, most of the time, the job description often is inaccurate. HR people laugh when I say 80% of a job description is accurate. We just don't know which is the 20% that is inaccurate. So I always coach people to ask about the role at the beginning of the interview so you can talk about what you've done that matters to them and not just talk about what you've done. Because they only really care about, it's kind of Neanderthal like, need person who, hey, this person who can do. And you know they want square peg, square hole, plug and play, and then they start expanding from there. But they want to know that the concrete things that they need done can be done by you. And then from there, they come up with all the tiebreakers. So I'm with you wholeheartedly here. We got to get people focused on delivering the goods as early as possible, whether you're the person who's the pivoter or the person who's the plug and play. It's what is it that they need that you can do and making sure they know you can do it rather than, hi, I'm going to tell you everything and I want you to bask in my magnificence. Aren't I wonderful here? And wasting everyone's time, including your own.
Yeah, so, I completely agree. I use that line all the time. You need to be the square peg for their square hole.
Right. So what kind of tools can people use in order to optimize their side of this? Because employers, of course, they've got applicant tracking systems. They've got, you know, video these days to evaluate and assess people. I'm talking about one-way video rather than just simply two-way video. Mm-hmm. What sort of tools can job hunters use or deploy in order to support their efforts?
Yeah, so we subscribe to the idea what gets measured gets managed. And a lot of job seekers kind of keep it in their head. They'll randomly apply to things. They don't keep track. They don't do follow-ups. And so some diligent job seekers will make a spreadsheet, but then you got to like think about how to design it, what to put in it. So we said, look, don't worry about any of that stuff. We're going to give you a process and we're going to give you tooling to help reinforce that process. So it starts with a Chrome extension. The other thing we said is we're going to go to you. There are so many ways to find jobs out there. We said, we're not going to try to create this super duper Google of job searching. It's too big of a problem. And many of the jobs aren't even online, right? It's from talking to a friend or in a community or who knows what. So let's go with you. Let's create this companion. So you install this Chrome extension. The majority of the people still job search in the browser. Eventually we'll have an app, but the bulk of the job searching work happens at a computer. So we said, look, let's get focused and do that. And then once you install this Chrome extension, it really goes with you everywhere. So whether you're job searching on LinkedIn, Indeed, Hired, any of these sites, I think we support over 50 job boards. You just click this button and we ingest all the data for you. We ingest the company, the job post, the day it was posted. And our main design ethos is how do we save you time so you can focus on the things that matter. So with LinkedIn in particular, which is where I think like 85% of the jobs that have been saved on Teal are from, we then start to monitor that job for you daily if it gets taken down. As soon as it goes into Teal, we extract all the keywords for you. We put it into a funnel automatically of bookmarked, applying. So you have a time to sort of think about how to customize your materials, applied, interviewing, negotiating. And then when it's in each of those stages, rather than just being a passive data management tool, we then start to embed guidance. There's a checklist for each stage. There's embedded email templates for you to send communications. There are tools to bookmark contacts and see the skills of a person so you can build rapport. There's automatic notifications on follow-up. There's a dashboard for your cadence and pacing of your job search. And then there's a whole bunch of other content on, best practices on how to interview and things like that built into the platform. But really what we're trying to do is create this companion that helps you make the right decision. A lot of people wake up, they look at their computer, and you could do anything when it comes to job searching. So it's like, we should know better than them what they should focus on today to get the highest output from that little bit of time that they have to focus on their job search. So that's our goal. Right now, I'd say we've got all the data tracking in place. We've got a lot of the time savings. Now we're really focused on the embedded proactive guidance.
Fascinating. So it's a Chrome extension. It runs on any number of platforms as a result. And I'll ask some of the questions that I'm always asked. What does the system recommend in terms of when someone should follow up after submission?
So I give this one's in the sort of the digital course. I haven't embedded it in the interface yet, but I'll give you the response I give to everybody is, so there's like an if, right? So if I apply like in the first half of the week, follow up within the week, don't let the weekend lapse. And then if you're applying, if you sent out your first communication on a Thursday or Friday, send it right at the beginning of the next week. So it's not like a hard and fast rule. And I think this is one of my issues with a lot of the job search advice is that they really try to distill it down into prescriptive things that people can follow. And I try to take it back to the intent because I want people to use their thought process, right? Use your common sense and your intuition. So if you sent it at the beginning of the week, well, you've given yourself some time, right? You want what increase your chances of a response, right? That's the goal. That's the outcome. Don't get too hung up on the tactics I give people. So what I try to say is you want to best position yourself for a response. If you send a follow-up on a Friday afternoon, your chances of getting a response are really low. They're going to get a whole bunch of emails. It's going to go to the bottom of the list. So that's just not a good time. And so instead of me overcomplicating it and giving you all these kind of instructions, I try to give people the intent. The intent is to get a response. So don't send a follow-up on a Thursday or Friday. That means if you first communicated with them on a Wednesday, well, it's probably weird to send a follow-up within 48 hours. So wait till Monday. And so that's kind of when people want the tactics, that's what I say. If you first communicated on a Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday, you have until Friday. If you communicated on a Thursday or Friday, get it out by the Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday of the next week.
And I happen to agree with you. One of the things I would always tell job hunters when I did search is, it's Friday afternoon. If I follow up with them today, I know it's going to voicemail. So, you know, I could send them an email, but it's on the bottom. And if I would tell people, if you're applying for a job and it's Friday that this job came out and you're sending the application in now, like, I'll also say, why would you ever want to apply for a job? Why not just network your way in? But that's a digression here. So if you're applying on a Friday afternoon, like, you know, you're buried. Everyone's come in on the weekend. At least, you know, do a delay send so it goes in on Monday at 7:45 a.m. That creates the impression that you're up early because it's before 8, even though all you've done is a delay send on the resume. People want, you know, because of the model of transformation that so many organizations have created, they want formulas and prescriptions for what to do. They've stopped really thinking about what it's like to be the person on the other side receiving. They want to know, I should do this, and keep it that simple. Anyway, what other kinds of tools does Teal have for job hunters that's going to make them more effective? We got the Chrome extension. We know there's things built into that. What other kinds of tools are available to you?
So we have a personality assessment. We think a lot of times starting off a job search with understanding who you are is really important. We call it a work style. You know, it's not like Myers-Briggs or something like that. It's modeled off a two-factor system or a four-quadrant model like DISC or Colors or Hexaco or any of the others. What we've added to it is a 360 component where you can have others take it, because a lot of times we have a lack of self-awareness or blind spots, and that's all free. Actually, the whole platform's free. And so we think that's really helpful, and we encourage people to do that at the beginning of their process to get that self-awareness, because then we can actually give you job search advice based on your work style. You know, so as an example, if you're a primary two, which is someone who's a bit more gregarious and extroverted and likes talking and thinks out loud, networking comes a little easier for them. Actually getting applications finished on that last 10% might be a little bit harder for them. You know, someone who in our style is like a primary four, analytical, very high quality bar, they really enjoy the researching, finding opportunities, but the struggle for them is perfectionism. And so they might struggle to get an application out because they need it to be perfect. And then they let perfect be the enemy of good enough. And so we give people those kind of insights based on their work style. Some people really connect with it, others, you know, don't. But we find that to be really valuable. We are in the beta testing of a Chrome extension for bookmarking contacts, because we know that like networking is the ultimate career unlock. And LinkedIn really lacks a lot of functionality for saving contacts, adding notes on a contact. So that's in beta right now. It should be out in early September. And we also have the beginnings of a resume builder. We call it the career history. We've intentionally not focused on the formatting of the resume, which unfortunately blocks a lot of people from using it, but it's the wrong thing they should focus on. And it really emphasizes the content. We've got like an achievement wizard to help you structure achievements with what you did, what was the outcome, what was the result, using metrics, and gives them almost like a Mad Libs interface to doing that. And so we're very focused on the content and tooling to help you best present yourself as fast as possible.
And it's funny that you do it that way, because folks, this is the framework for stories when you get to the interview phase. So don't think of it in terms of the resume. Think of it in terms of it's interview prep material. So that this way you're able to sell yourself very effectively using a story format that's going to allow you to stand out from others. This is fabulous, by the way. What haven't we covered yet that we really should?
Look, there's a lot of components to thinking about how to grow your career. You know, there's a lot of research out there right now that's talking about, you know, 41% of the workforce intends to switch at the end of the pandemic. You know, we'll see what that means. You know, maybe there is no end, you know, but anyways, I think the takeaway from those headlines is that the world has woken up to the idea and understanding that being in a job they don't love is unacceptable. And it's not even that the companies are bad or treating them poorly. A lot of the people, it's just, I don't want to do this. You know, I somehow found myself in this career because, like me, my career counselor told me to do it and they were wrong. You know, my parents forced me into it. It was the career of our family. And I don't want to do this. And I think there's more and more examples of people that have had that courage and made that leap and are really happy doing work that they love. And I think that the pandemic has shown people that life's too short. You've got, people have had trust and autonomy for 18 months. They got to work remotely and now they're being told to come back to the office, but they don't want to go start a company, which is the alternative. So they're going to go look for companies that are going to enable them to live the life they want to live. And I think that we're at this moment more so than we ever have been. And it's what I've been calling the age of agency. And so I think that's going to be a really interesting thing to watch here as people start to transition. I mean, I think April of 2021 is the largest month on record of voluntary resignations. So I think that there's a lot of things going on there. What I would caution people and advise them to do is, even as unhappy as you may be in a job, understand that your relationship with the company is commercial. Your relationship with the people is personal. That goes with you forever. So even though you may say, I'm done with this company, I hate them, do not be disrespectful to your manager. Give notice, do the right things, because those things stay with you forever. And so be mindful that your reputation, you can't expunge these things on your record when you were rude, when you didn't leave with grace, you didn't help the company, you didn't leave a good impression. So be mindful. And even if you are miserable at your job and you hate it, be mindful of those things. Those people may recommend you one day. They may have been going through a hard time themselves. If they go to a new job, maybe they thought great of you and they'll recruit you. Your network is the gift that keeps on giving. So do everything you possibly can to nourish and leverage that network as you're leaving your job.
Amen, brother. How can people find out more about you, Teal, everything? How can they get in touch with you?
So I'm most active on Twitter, at David Fano. I'm very active on
spell
LinkedIn.
Spell your last
well.
Name for them.
F like Frank, A N like Nancy, O. That's what I heard my mom say all growing up when she was on the phone. and I'm very active on LinkedIn. It's in/ David Fano the same. And then Teal, you can find us at Teal, like the color, TEALHQ.com. And you can get all the tools there. It's 100% free. You can sign up for our work styles, our job tracker. And we also have an incredible community on Slack where people give each other job search advice and help each other out. So it's, you can find me on any of those platforms. I try to be responsive as I can. Or you can email me, Dave@TEALHQ.com.
So that's today's show. I hope you found it helpful. And if you did, here are a few things I can do to help you with your job search beyond simply being your coach. First of all, I've got a new book out called The Right Answers to Tough Interview Questions. It is like a cookbook with answers to tons of interview questions that you're going to be asked on interviews. And if you pair it up with my other new book, The Ultimate Job Interview Framework, they are a terrific pair of books to help you with interviewing. In addition, a new service where you can practice mock interviews. If you go to thebiggamehunter.us/mock, I've got a service there, very inexpensive, like $99, where we have mock interviews set up. I'm going to be adding more to it very soon, but you can record your answers to them and then I can critique them and help you perform better on them. You probably have noticed my show notes are pretty thorough with products and services that can help you with your search, and connect with me on LinkedIn at linkedin.com/IN/TheBigGameHunter. Lastly, my website has a ton of great information. That's thebiggamehunter.us. Now, if you're not ready to go there and go through the blog, put the address in your phone, thebiggamehunter.us, Jeff Altman. So this way, when you're ready to go, you have a way of getting back to my website. Hope you have a terrific day, and most importantly, be great!